Today's program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, producing the country's best dry, cured, and aged hams, bacon, and sausage using 100% pasture-raised, certified humane Berkshire cuts. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America, I'm back. I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper, a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and most importantly, I'm an avid lifelong hunter. And you're listening to The Wild Game Domain, From the Hunt to the Hearth, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. Okay, so today's subject matter is big news out here in New York, really in the whole Northeast, and It's an ongoing debate on how we are going to control the deer population here in the Northeast. So a couple of weeks ago, I was in class, and I have this student, and she just kind of blurted out something. Knowing I'm a hunter, she blurted something out about, "Hey, chef, did you read the article about them releasing lions in the Hamptons to try to control deer?" And you know, I rolled my eyes at her and I said, "What's the matter with you? You know, they're not going to do that. Come on. You can't even, you know, if you spit on the sidewalk in the Hamptons, you go to jail for 10 years. So they're not going to release lions into a populated area." So she showed me, I said, "Send me the link for that article." And it happened to be a local kind of online newspaper, Dan's Papers. You could check it out online if you want. I had never heard of it before, but apparently it's pretty popular out in the Hamptons. And this guy, you know, reports on all the local doings out there in the Hamptons. And one of his articles was about a rich mining executive from Norway or something, somewhere in Europe, who has a mansion out in the Hamptons. And his plan was to import, I think, 8 to 10 lions. He was gonna, you know, he was gonna knock them out in Africa, put them in cages, bring them over, put up a big chain link fence around his whole property, and release these lions for a period of a week or so to let the lions thin out the deer herds on his property. And you know, the article was great because it even quoted some regulations, some laws from the Hamptons local ordinance that said, you know, you can't import the following animals. And it was like chimpanzees, cougars, you know, gorillas. But nowhere did it say African lion. So, you know, that was his whole justification for this being true. And then he followed up. He continued to follow up, updating people on how this was progressing, how to plan, where the lions were. They were on a boat traveling to Long Island, and they were going to go on a ferry and eventually make it to his property out in the Hamptons. And then the latest update, I just read about it this morning, was that the lions had killed 3,000 deer, and it was very successful. And they went out and they collected the lions, and they're back in Africa living peacefully. So it turns out, obviously not true, right? The guy was trying to make a point about, you know, the overpopulation of deer, and what a big problem it is, especially on the east end of Long Island. And you know, if you live here in the city, don't think you're immune. They're conducting a study as we speak in Central Park to see if there's any deer. Apparently, there's been some deer droppings found and some other sign of white-tailed deer populating the park, which I would love if they opened, you know, bow hunting in Central Park. That would make my life. Staten Island, you know, it's a fact. There are white-tailed deer now populating Staten Island. They're becoming a problem. They're starting to get in the way of cars and commuters. So Staten Island's starting to debate a program to cull or thin out the deer herds. So I thought we'd dedicate today's show to reducing, I guess you would call it damage, deer damage, to your garden, to your yard, you know, to your property in general. this all started, you know, and you've heard my show before, and if you haven't, you know, in the early 1900s, the white-tailed deer population totaled less than, you know, 500,000, give or take. You know, we had decimated the wild animal populations in this country strictly through overhunting for commercial use. You know, luckily today, through the effort of hunters, conservationists, various organizations, that number is somewhere around 15 million deer in the United States. You know, it's a success story. There's no way around it. The white-tailed deer, one of the most resilient animals, you know, in the world, you know, has increased in population for everyone to enjoy. Unfortunately, you know, 15 million deer is a little much for us. And so for you homeowners, gardeners, you landscapers, especially fancy people out in the Hamptons, you know, with all your shrubbery, you know, to me, more importantly, the farmers out there in the Hamptons, they're having, you know, all sorts of conflicts with these animals. You know, the damage is costly. First of all, it's unsightly to property owners. You know, it's destructive to crops, commercial crops. So it's become a problem, you know, all through the Northeast. And prime deer habitats are continuing to grow and expand year after year, week after week. It just keeps happening. So, you know, they're living in the backyard. My tree stand out in Quogg, which borders the Hamptons, the club I'm in out there, you know, I bow hunt probably 500 feet, give or take, from a house. I could, when the leaves fall, I could see the guy in his backyard, and the deer have a run right behind his house. I mean, literally hundreds of deer over the course of the year are moving within 10 yards of this guy's house. They funnel down around his property and conveniently walk right under my tree stand where I harvest them. So, you know, for me, I want to discuss some ways of controlling this problem. You know, and it starts with you, the homeowners. You want to be the first line of defense, obviously. Don't rely on the government. The government's got some really bad ideas on controlling these deer populations. And anytime, really, the outside of the government getting involved with tag limits, the amount of deer we could harvest, meaning hunters every year, anything outside of that they've tried has been a disaster. And you know, my reference point for saying that is Vermont. 10 years ago, don't quote me, Vermont had one of its worst winters it had seen in a long time. You know, huge amounts of snow. You know, it was a polar vortex that moved down into Vermont. It was very scary. And so instead of letting the deer, you know, kind of work their way through this storm, they decided, or this really bad winter, they decided, the Department of Environmental Control decided, you know, we're going to drop food for these deer. It's the only way to keep them alive. Well, first of all, deer in the winter, when the weather gets bad, they go to what we call a yard. They all come together. They circle up. The bucks stay in the center. They sacrifice the younger deer on the outside. It's their protective means. It keeps warmth. They stay close to each other, and they're protected against predators by you know, concentrating their numbers. And they venture out every once in a while for some food. They come back. They rest. They conserve calories. And this is how they make it through the winter. So the DEC up there decides to drop food. And I believe it was like corn, you know, some kind of cornmeal, you know, ground corn from helicopters. So they concentrated all this food. The deer, you know, they're in the yard. They smell this wonderful food a couple hundred yards. They all leave their yard, go to eat the food. The first thing it does, they're all feeding off these piles of dropped food for them. So all the diseases found, any diseases that some of the deer had, were transmitted throughout the herd very quickly because they were all eating it in close quarters. So this took care of a large population of the deer herd, killed them off real quick. The second thing it did was expose the deer in deep snow to predators. So now the coyotes start having a field day with the young fawns, the young does. ripping them to shreds, and it almost decimated their deer herd. So, you know, the government getting involved is never really a good idea, which brings up the fact that there's some debate, and truthfully, I don't even know where they are. I think it's official now. They're going to use, you ready for this? Federal sharpshooters to hunt deer out in the Hamptons and thin the herds out. First of all, what the hell is a federal sharpshooter? It doesn't exist. Liars. Government lying to us again. There's no such thing. First of all, sharpshooter in the military, if that's where we want to go, right? A federal institution, the United States military, being a sharpshooter is not good. Okay? Expert is what you want to earn when you go to the range in the military. So sharpshooter was a subpar qualification within the military ranks. So stop using that stupid term, sharpshooter. It doesn't mean anything. I was an Army sniper. I was an expert rifleman. I knew how to shoot. So I don't know. I guess they're going to use FBI snipers, DEA snipers. I don't know what federal sharpshooters are. But they're not hunters. You know, they're not guys that have lived in the woods, guys who know the pattern of the deer, know the areas, know the woods in these suburban areas. So I feel like that's a bad idea. So I want to discuss some ways that the homeowner could protect, whether you're a hunter or not, we'll get to that. But, you know, the way the homeowner could do a few simple things to protect their property from these very resilient animals. And the best way, first of all, is if you're planning on planting something, is become familiar with the feeding habits of the deer in your area. Deer can eat up to like 500 different species of plants, but they tend to be very selective. Deer will expand their foraging area when when their preferred food becomes scarce. They will also develop a preferred taste for what you rich people out in Hamptons call your ornamentals. You know, those big leafy green flowering plants you have in your front yard, the deer will fall in love with that. And this usually occurs in the winter, late winter and early spring when there's snow, when the weather's bad and the snow cover reduces the availability of their natural foods. Their fat reserves start to become depleted and they'll pretty much eat anything, anything green that they can find. Under these circumstances, deer will browse even the most resistant plants rather than starve. And that's, you know, that's part of my love for these whitetails. They're so amazingly resilient. Deer generally have small home ranges, so they become used to what's in their area very quickly. And they may be, you know, like I said, my example of the house where I, you know, the guy who lives by my tree stand or my tree stand being set up by his house, those deer, you know, when they become desperate and they can't find acorns and they can't find their normal browse, they will obviously move into his garden and do whatever they have to do. You know, and they eventually through this exposure, to these plants that you have in your yard, they'll develop a preference for the fertilized gardens, flowers, shrubs, any kind of trees on your property, rather than the actual natural vegetation in the woods. Deers may also change their habits over time and suddenly begin eating a plant that they avoided in the past. So how do we do this? You know, there are so many different management options here. And, you know, first one I would say as a conservationist, forget a hunter, but as a conservationist, you know, we got to learn to coexist with the deer. It, you know, for all you animal rights activists out there who love the deer, protect the deer, well, get involved with us, please, and help, you know, help spread the word here. And let's give these homeowners some help because we got to coexist with the deer and other wildlife for that matter. And, you know, it's part of a choosing in life. And if you're living in a rural or suburban area, you got to keep in mind, you know, you're going to have deer in your backyard. And, you know, the ways to minimize that damage created by these wonderfully resilient animals is, first of all, avoid planting preferred food items for the deer. Avoid planting native plants. Sounds crazy, but, you know, it's what they're used to. Using repellents, and we're going to talk about that. You know, you could go to the local, any hardware store out in the Hamptons, and they sell deer repellents, and they work pretty good, very expensive, and only somewhat successful, meaning they'll only last for a certain amount of time. Another thing you could do, and we'll talk about this, is construct physical barriers, netting or fencing. It's not 100% effective, but, you know, all of these things. And you know what, homeowners out in the Hamptons, allow hunting. When a hunter knocks on your door and says, hey, I was looking at the tax maps and I noticed you have 10 acres, may I hunt your property? You know, understand most hunters are responsible, conservation-minded people who want to try to help. Yes, they enjoy hunting and they want to harvest an animal for food, but it's the best of both worlds. You get the deer off your property and they get to kill they're looking for the venison that they want to put on their table. So when we come right back after this break, we're going to get more specific and talk about some real concrete things you could do to protect your property from these deer. We'll be right back on heritageradionetwork.org.
You are listening to Combat by Sleepies on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Chad Pagano, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org. All right, so let's get specific. How are we going to protect your property from these marauding deer that are going to overthrow your backyard, or your front yard, for that matter? First of all, repellents. Homemade repellents are very effective, and the beautiful thing is, instead of going out and buying these fancy commercial repellents, you could really make these things at home for half the price. Repellents, after you make them, should be applied before the deer get used to eating that plant. So as you plant something, get your repellents out around and on these plants. And they should be reapplied regularly. You know, with these recipes I'm going to give you now for some of what I think are the best repellents, you know, they're not going to have all the agents and chemicals that are going to help it cling to the plant and the surface area of the plant. So, you know, when it rains or it becomes humid or anything like that, this stuff is going to, you know, the effectiveness of these repellents is going to be depleted. So you got to reapply it regularly. And they could be applied with a simple hand sprayer. You know, you could go buy one of those hand sprayers at the supermarket or the hardware store. Or I use a low-pressure garden sprayer. You could buy, you know, you pump it up and you just spray it all over the place. And that's available, you know, any garden center or hardware store. So here's some of the spray recipes I use. A garlic spray, right? Sounds delicious, but the deer don't like it. And this recipe makes about a quart, which, you know, depending on how much vegetation you need to protect, you could scale the recipe one way or another. You want to use 4 eggs, 2 ounces of a red pepper sauce, 2 ounces of chopped garlic, add just under 1 quart of water to that, stir thoroughly, and strain. 1 quart is enough for 16, you know, medium to large size bushes for about a week. So 4 eggs. Put it in the bowl. Add your pepper sauce, you know, Frank's Red Hot. It doesn't matter, any brand pepper sauce. Hack up the garlic, kind of rough chop the garlic, and then add the water. What I usually do to facilitate this process, I bring the water to a boil quickly with everything in it and then let it cool. This releases the garlic oil and helps spread the peppers, you know, oil throughout the mixture. The eggs simply there, you want to scramble up the eggs, they're simply there as a thickening agent. So the 4 eggs to 1 quart of water will make this liquid somewhat thick. And once you have it, put it in your sprayer and get outside and start spraying your bushes. Also, a sour milk repellent. I'm giving you a couple options here. You know, you might have milk in your refrigerator. Take some out, leave it out on your counter, let it sour. So a sour milk repellent, and this recipe makes about a gallon. You want to use 1 egg, half cup of milk, and you want to put one tablespoon of cooking oil, 1 tablespoon of a dish detergent. If you ever got in trouble for cursing when you were a kid and your mom stuffed soap in your mouth, you know you didn't like it. So the same theory goes for the deer. And then you want to use 1 gallon of water. Spray on your plants and repeat if it's very humid or raining. And again, this will last about a week depending on the weather. And then you could also use a hot pepper spray. 2 teaspoons of hot pepper. Any kind of pepper works. I use, I always have a little crushed red pepper in my cabinet. Just throw a couple of teaspoons of red pepper, 1 teaspoon of the liquid dish soap, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, and about a gallon of water. And again, all these recipes, just bring it to a quick boil, help release all the oils and flavor, and then you can put it in your sprayer and get out there. These things work pretty good, but you got to stay on top of it. You got to get out there and spray your, you got to spray your vegetation or it's not going to work. It'll wear off eventually. And again, the deer being resilient will, they'll be back the next day. They'll check that food source daily at night, early mornings. You'll see them coming in and it's great to watch their reaction. I actually have trail cameras set up on some of the shrubs out at our clubhouse and, out in Quag. And, they'll come in and they're looking pretty normal and we take videos of them. And once they get within, say, a half inch of that leaf or plant or that vegetation, you see them jump back and get into a fighting stance like they want to fight the tree, you know. And they'll try it 3 or 4 times and they'll get in. And some of the older bucks, the braver bucks, will even come in and try to lick or grab at the tree. And then they'll realize and you'll see them run off. It works pretty good. As far as commercial repellents, just be careful. They're based on either an aroma, an odor, or a taste based repellent that'll keep the deer away. The odor repellents sound really good, but they generally don't work. The deer quickly figures out, yeah, this smells pretty bad, but I tried it and it's pretty tasty and it's doing what I need it to do. So I like the taste based repellents more than anything. Organic, they have organic repellents with an active ingredient of other animals' urine. You'll see things like fox urine or some predator urine, coyote urine. And the idea is that this will help repel the deer, which I've never used it, truthfully. Hunters used to use, fox and coyote urines as cover scents when they were going out in the woods thinking the deer would move around them. I always found it a little weird that you would use that as a cover scent knowing that deer are going to try to stay clear of predators. Also, within these, usually these urine-based repellents, you'll see. And the other problem is if they're by your door or your front house, they smell like pee. So as you're walking in your house, it smells like a bunch of bums went to the bathroom in front of your house. And I don't know if you want that either. Dried blood, again, of other animals, they'll put in these repellents. So they could work also. But for me, the homemade ones, a little garlic, some hot pepper, is the way to go. It's more natural. It's easier. And certainly cheaper to have that as part of your plan. Real quickly, we only got 5 minutes left. I can't believe the time goes. I could go on for like 8 hours about repelling deer. It's kind of weird. I feel as a hunter talking about repelling deer when, 9 times out of 10, I'm trying to attract deer, but for you homeowners, this is important. Physical barriers. Again, you got to understand the deer itself. They're very resilient. Deer have been known to dig, deer could jump. They have incredible jumping abilities. They'll work on a physical barrier over a course of time to break through that barrier. They're humans. They're not humans. They're like humans in the fact that they will avoid physical barriers if it's feasible. So, you know, if I'm coming to a fence and I have to get past the fence, you know, my first thought is walk around it. If it's easy to walk around it, I will. And deer will do the same thing. My second thought is, okay, I can't conveniently walk around this, I'll jump it. Deer will do the same thing. And then my third choice is, can I squeeze through somewhere or do I have to dig under this fence? And deer will have the same thought process when encountered by a physical barrier. You know, but you could use wire, plastic. Some people go as far as electric fences. I don't know if the problem's really that bad anywhere. But you want to make these fences 7 to 10 feet tall at a minimum. That's how, you know, a mature deer could jump at least 7 feet high to clear any kind of fence line. The bottom of the fence has to be closed. You have to dig in a little bit. You got to make sure the deer can't burrow or dig underneath the fence. So you want to use some kind of chicken wire underneath the fence to make sure they're not getting through that way. Netting could work, plastic mesh netting to cover individual plants. You know, it's inexpensive to go buy a roll of this stuff at Home Depot. The problem, you know, my wife had, and when I put netting over our shrubbery, is that it doesn't look pretty. You know, that's the problem. So if it's your backyard and you could get away with it, that orange plastic netting they have at Home Depot works really good. The mesh works great around the plants. Anything to disrupt the deer to getting, you know, just kind of inhibiting his way to that plant will hopefully get him to move off your property and go somewhere else. And the third thing, I only have a few more minutes, like I said, but, you know, scare tactics. And these are fun. Scare tactics are somewhat temporary in how the deer will respond to them. You know, so we're talking about, you know, loud noises, yard lights, you know, those sensor lights coming on, radios playing, you know, shiny objects. Some people hang up pie plates, you know, the aluminum pie plates you could buy at the supermarket, punch a hole, get some fishing wire, hang these in the trees next to each other, and as the wind blows, they act as kind of a wind chime, and they bang into each other, and they're shiny, and they make a fair amount of noise as the deer are approaching the trees, the bushes. They hear and see movement, and supposedly they'll move away from it. What I find, and usually is the case, the deer will sit at a safe distance from these noises, lights, and everything else, and kind of become accustomed to them, and they'll see them. And my example is when I'm hunting in my tree stand, and the guy comes out of his house to clean his yard in the fall. At first, I'm always like, oh, great, here we go with the leaf blower. He starts blowing all the leaves, and then he's starting with his work and the rake, and he's yelling at his kids. And you know what I've noticed over time? These deer will walk 10 yards again behind his yard as he's doing all his work, knowing that he is no threat no matter what the noise. And they'll just border his property, skirt his property, and come right to my tree stand. And the last thing I want to mention real quick is hunting. You know, I mentioned it before, but, you know, hunting is probably the most effective method for deer population. It is the most effective method of deer population control. It results in fewer deer. It results in economic stimulus for the town, the county, the state. And it's got to be the long-term solution. Hunting is already highly regulated in you know, especially New York State, Department of Environmental Control. And no matter where, you know, and the population levels of these deer are, you know, we could apply different techniques, whether that's archery hunting in more suburban areas, shotgun in slightly less populated areas. Muzzle loading is the way to go. I'm not even talking about high-powered rifles in these areas. But, you know, we have my muzzle loader, you know, relatively safe, low muzzle velocity. So promoting hunting in these areas is really the answer. In New York, Hunting is allowed on private land during deer season, you know, with written permission or verbal permission from the landowners. So give the hunters permission to hunt your property. I think you'll be thoroughly surprised. And you're going to love the venison that these hunters provide you, because if you give me permission to hunt your property, I'm paying you back by saying, thank you, here's a side of venison. And if you don't know how to cook it, I'll even come in and cook it for you. The other thing, if you are a hunter and you're a landowner, don't forget about your deer damage permits, your nuisance permits. If you have a, if you're the taxpayer of that property and you hold a hunting license, you could apply for additional deer permits. And you could hunt these deer legally on your own property. Of course, check your local ordinance, but generally it's within 500, as long as you're not within 500 feet of a house, you're free to hunt, especially by archery, in more populated areas out east. And the last thing I would say is petition the governor of this fine state and petition the politicians to work with the DEC to establish longer hunting seasons. Right now, the Long Island hunting season is one of the longest in the country. It compares to some of the longer hunting seasons down south. But what they do is October 1st, archery hunting starts, and we go through October, November, into December. December, they shut down for a period of time, a week or so, for the holidays, for some reason. And then we start our overly regulated firearm season, shotguns and muzzleloaders, through the month of January. By January, it becomes a little more difficult to pattern and figure out. We're working off their fall patterns, their feeding patterns, then their rut patterns. Now they're going into their winter patterns. But January is a very effective time to hunt deer. And I would say, the DEC, allow hunting in the spring, allow hunting in the summer for these deer. Let the hunters pattern these deers at these times. And set strict, restrictions on the hunter, so we could get more kills, and let the hunter be the answer to the deer population problems. Whew, that was a lot of talking. I hope I didn't sound too preachy about it. I think I did. Unfortunately, my friends, that's all the time we have today. I'd like to thank Joe for producing and engineering today's show, and you could always find archived episodes of The Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.